finish it soon.
It's the latest update on the weather.
Mr. Johnson said
It's unbelievable how much you could invest in that stuff.
I saw a
shotgun they had
I mean, there's no way that it could work unless it's interacting with the computer. I don't think they do.
But they said they would. I think we just had a discussion about it.
Starts at 75
grand. So.
Wow. You've got to really love the sport.
I couldn't possibly.
Yeah. Wow.
There's no way in the world I have a $75,000 gun. There's no way in the world it's leaving.
When I get to, when I'm not working hard on one of the other things, it's an emergency all the time.
Yes.
Hey, what are you doing?
Okay, now it's 7 o'clock. They call in the February 25th regular planning commission meeting to order at this time. And normally we have Pledge of Allegiance, and we don't. Yeah, we do have a flag in one corner.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First order of business is a director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a few items to report. The Board of Supervisors at their February 18th meeting approved the rezoning for ZMP 1404, Green Springs Timber LLC, from A1 Agricultural to I2 Industrial General. Also, on February 10th, 2015, the Board of Zoning Appeals overturned the Zoning Administrator's determination in BZA case 1402, JWS Enterprises LLC, and upheld the Zoning Administrator's determination in the case BZA 1403. And I'll be glad to talk with any of the commissioners privately about anything I can about those cases.
Thank you. At this time will be our first of two public comment sections. Anyone that wishes to speak about any other item other than the items that are on the agenda tonight may come forth and state your name and your address, and you're limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one come forward, we'll end our first public comment section. The next item is approval of minutes. I had a couple comments about those. One item, when we were discussing our meeting dates, it said we didn't have a second, and I can't remember whether we did or not, so we did have a 4-0 vote. I don't know whether we did have a second or not. The second item is the fact that Mr. Gaines was late coming in, but it shows that he, at the top that he was present. And then we have some votes that were like 4-3-0-1 and 4-0 and so forth. We need to probably, for legal reason, put in that he came in right after the selection of commission dates to for legal standpoint.
Just to clean up your first issue, would it make sense to just vote on that again and have a second so we could, or does that even matter at all?
The Robert's Rules provision on that is that if a matter is properly moved and there is no second, ordinarily the chairman rules it to fail for want of a second. However, if a vote is taken on a motion that's properly moved but not seconded, and the motion passes, it's a valid motion.
Okay, so we're good.
So I think it would help to say whether there was a second. But if there was no second, as long as the motion, as long as the minutes reflect that there was no second, it's not unlawful to adopt the matter without a second.
Well, the minutes say there wasn't a second, and I'm sure nobody remembers. So. I sure do.
I think that's fine.
Thank you. Do I have a motion about the approval of minutes? And with regards to the issue, one issue?
I move that we accept the minutes as submitted with the correction that on the submission that Mr. Gaines was late and wasn't able to vote on the election of officers.
What I would suggest is the minutes reflect, you know, could say something like Mr. Gaines entered the meeting, preferably on time, but if you don't have time, then what place there was in the meeting.
I must have come in because...
Right before the resolution.
Because it's got 5-0, so do you... We will amend the minutes to show that Mr. Gaines arrived in time to vote on the resolution.
That'd be fine.
Okay, I have a motion by Mrs. Eager. Do I have a second?
Second.
Mr. Zimmer seconds.
Don't want to be making a habit of this.
So, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 4-0. We don't have any presentations or site development plans or subdivisions. First item on there, our public hearings, is ZMP 1405, Lake Monticello Volunteer Fire Department.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. This first of our two zoning applications tonight. It's ZMP 1405. It's a request to rezone A1 to I-4 conditional. Again, it's a request to rezone 6.134 acres, tax map 18, section 8, parcel 38F, A1 general, agricultural general, also residential limited. The draft proper statement was submitted on February 3rd, I believe. The applicant submitted a draft proper statement that single family detached, single family attached, a townhouse dwelling shall not be permitted by right or by special permission on this property. proposed use of property for facility space for the Levi Chandler Volunteer Fire and Rescue Department. It is located within the Rob Anna Community Planning Area. It was a family subdivision that was approved back in 2010 for this parcel. And this was one of the 6-acre lots that was divided with that subdivision application, and the 3-year deed restriction has expired. So the fire department is taking over the issue. This is a copy of the draft proffer statement that was submitted to us on February 3rd. Again, this is the language that excludes single-family detached, single-family attached, and townhouse dwellings. And they shall not be permitted on this property by right or by special permission. This is a zoning map. This is the property here outlined in bold. It has frontage on South Boston Road. It's adjacent to the firehouse property, which is here. It is adjoining agriculturally zoned property. This is one of the family subdivision lots. There's a 20-foot access easement off of South Boston to serve this lot. But access for the subject property is proposed to be accessed internally from the firehouse property. Aerial image, again, this is the subject property here. Firehouse property is here. This is the existing site that was submitted with the application. Firehouse property. And next screen, please. This was submitted to us today showing proposed improvements. This would be a blue slice here. South Boston is out here. So showing proposed improvements to the firehouse facility and parking as well. They've indicated they want to do a boundary, not an adjustment, a lot consolidation to get rid of this internal lot, so building setbacks won't be an issue. And, basically combine the two parcels into one parcel.
Can you go back to that?
Back.
So the what this shows, both those buildings or one of those buildings would be additional space. The one that straddles the property.
That's correct. This building is existing.
Yeah.
That's existing. This is proposed, and as you can see, it does straddle the boundary line. So if they vacated that, it would clean it up. Would not be any issue for building setbacks.
Thank you.
Yeah. A few photos that were taken today, and the snow again that preceded. You can see basically the boundary line here. And this is the subject property, wooded property here. Existing firehouse facility. And frontage along South Boston Road, our public notice sign here. So again, it is a request for conditional rezoning of 6.134 acres. The Rob Anna Community Planning Area. The zoning is approved. Any site development takes place, it will be required to submit a plan to the planning office for review and approval. Conference plan states medium and small commercial businesses along office civic residential uses combined to form a series of needed additional development that are interconnected to surrounding developments. This is a civic use and it has a by right use in the R4 district. Conclusion, the rezoning request appears to meet the intent of the comprehensive plan, the medium and small commercial business along with office, civic, and residential uses combined to form a series of new additional development that are interconnected with surrounding developments. Planning Commission may want to consider how this request does or doesn't align with the goals of the text of the comprehensive plan. And we have the suggested motion on the screen. I'll be happy to answer any questions, and the applicants are here also.
Just for clarification, that easement is actually an easement going back to the landlocked property that is behind us.
Correct. Jason, if you can take the slides back to the aerial. That one right there.
Right here?
Yeah. This is the easement right here. And serves Lot A, and that was part of the family subdivision that we approved back in 2010 for this parcel and for this parcel. And this is the means of access they provided. This is the subject parcel, and they plan on accessing it internally from the fire, from the firehouse.
Well, I can say one thing. I was down there last night, and they need additional parking because that place was overrun with vehicles last night. So,
It's not just last night. It's often.
Well, I see it quite often, but particularly with that last night.
Also, I want to notify the commission. I've placed the applicant's exhibit at each of your places. If you want to look at it, a tangible copy in your hands to look at, instead of the issues for this.
Does anyone else have any questions?
I have a question. It's really not related to the rezoning, but how is this funded? Is it funded by the fire department or through the county, or is the building going to be requested in the CIP?
I'll defer that to the applicant.
Okay.
We're not positive about how this funding is this point. I mean, the corporation, the volunteer corporation bought the property.
The
volunteer corporation bought the property.
Uh-huh.
And we're looking at various options for funding.
Okay.
They bought this property in November.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah, there's a.
Right. So we're looking for. We did make a request in the budget process to the county to assist with debt service if we were to take a loan for this. We also, if the county was unable to do that, we asked the county to fund 100% of our operating costs, which they currently don't. So last year we provided $169,000 in corporate money to supplement what the county gave us so we could run ambulance and fire and water rescue. So if the county actually paid the operating costs, then we wouldn't need to request money from the county to go forward with the improvement project. We would fund it ourselves.
So
we're not certain for sure which path, you know,
we'll
take what's available to us.
But the county doesn't fund you?
They fund us at about 45% of our operating cost, which is significantly less. The difference just in the rescue squad is $55,000 a year. Between what they give us and what we then have to give to rescue so they can operate. And basically we get that money through fundraising efforts, golf tournaments, bingo, rental of the Maple Room, a variety of activities. So we bring in about $200,000 a year through those operations to supplement the operating cost. So we have requested that the county consider funding operating costs, and that would free up our money so we can go forward with the project.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
Any more comments from the applicant or staff? Not, we'll open the public hearing at this time. Anyone that wants to speak on this matter, come forward, state your name and address. You're limited to 3 minutes.
A latecomer, sorry about that. And I guess I have questions about it. My name is Dee McCauley.
Would you go up to the...
I think I wore my skinny pants today. Hi, my name is Dee McCauley. My mother originally gifted the parcel we're talking about to Elwood Tyler. Her name is Mamie Garnett at 861 South Boston Road. And certainly for the fire department, no real concern there. The concern is that in changing the zoning to the residential, the R4 residential zoning limited, if the project doesn't move forward, then does that leave that zoning there? And then what then do we open up? You know, we've seen what's happened in that area. Right there, you know, it used to be a parcel that belonged to another family member, and now, you know, we've got, you know, that huge development there. Unfortunately, really it's something I think we've really seen happen in that area, and then I think you're certainly seeing it in the Columbia area, where you're seeing in areas that were predominantly African-American home sites, which is what ours is, it was my family, is that you're seeing these commercial developments coming in, and it really distresses me. And it's not what I want to see, and I don't think that it's right. I don't think it's right for Fluvanna. I don't think it's what I don't think it's sending the right message. I don't think it sets it sends a message that that Fluvanna respects everybody's heritage equally. And I don't want to see another. If it's the fire department going in there, I think that speaks well of our community. But if that doesn't happen, I don't want to see another development go in there, so that we end up with more Section 8 housing moving in. I just don't. I don't want to see it. I think it's wrong, and that's my concern.
One thing, they have proffered out a certain amount of housing. Can you tell her exactly what was proffered out?
Yes, ma'am. They have offered a draft proffer statement that excludes certain types of residential units. So, I think you walked in after
I. Yeah, I'm sorry, I really apologize.
That's fine. So, they have proffered out single family detached, single family attached, townhouse dwellings. They're saying that those are excluded by right or by special permit.
And they, could you also show her that picture of their, that they gave today about their proposed actual use?
Yes.
So then there were, and it's not, there's no commercial application because it's only residential limited. Is that, would I take that as being?
Why don't you tell, Steve, why don't you tell her what uses are remain after the property?
Okay, great.
It's, so they're excluding residential, but there's, it's off, the R4 zoning, if it's approved, stays attached to the property, excluding the residential, and there are certain uses that are permitted by right and by special use permit. Those are our zoning ordinance. You feel free to look at this. I can also email you some additional information, but so just a couple of the uses that are permitted by right would be conservation area, public park. Some of these are accessory to a dwelling, like a home occupation,
right,
which
yeah.
That eliminates that
right,
use.
Right,
so, a lot of them are residential uses. One that was not proffered out is a group home that's permitted by right, but that's subject to site development plan approval process. That's just an example. Mm-hmm. So they are requesting R4 zoning, and if uses have been permitted by right, uses have been permitted by special.
Well, the uses that remain permitted are conservation areas, public parks and recreational areas, public uses, home occupations, but a home occupation has to be in a home, so that only supposes it would have to be a home. Accessory uses, of course, cluster developments, but again, those have to be cluster developments of permitted uses. Greenhouses, non-commercial, private kennels, marinas wouldn't apply because they never have lake furniture. Minor utilities, accessory dwellings, and that probably would qualify. And if they do this development, they probably would have accessory dwellings, multifamily dwellings, and two-family dwellings and group homes.
The multifamily dwellings would still be.
That's right.
Yes.
Now it's about 6 acres, and there's.
I believe the density is 2.9.
Yeah, it's less than three units an acre. So that the maximum, if all this fell through, and they wanted to put multifamily development on this, they could put as many as a little bit less than three times six. So they could conceivably put 18 units on there.
And that's certainly a concern. Is there no zoning less than the R4 that would still give them their permitted use?
Well, the proposed use is to basically an auxiliary addition to the firehouse, which is the civic use. Civic use is by right in R4, and I can't speak for the applicants, but I imagine that's why they're going for R4 and the predominant amount of Lakemont and Chubb is already zoned R4. So.
But I can tell you the adjoining lots, because they're owned by my family,
yeah,
are not R4.
They're A1.
Yeah, so I can answer what the adjoining are, because they're all owned by my family. So I guess what my question is there anything other than R4? Because I can tell you that I assume that the fire department is not too concerned about.
Go back to that other picture.
I would think that their biggest issue is that they wanted to have their fire station there.
About it shows the parking lot.
We need the parking area.
Yeah, the parking area for it, yeah.
There is a picture of what they, right there, what they.
That's what they're planning on doing.
Yeah.
And that's actually what they're doing, is making more parking area.
This is an exhibit that shows this site layout.
If I could help clarify just a little bit, and I would ask Mr. Payne to make sure I don't say anything that's grossly wrong.
Okay.
But you're right that R4 zoning is R4 zoning. They've given up the right to do some things that they otherwise could with the proffer. They will be giving that up. And this is their plan. I think everybody agrees that this is legitimately, they're not trying to put one over on us. This is their plan. But it's not ever a guarantee. But if this, for them to do this or anything else on the property in the future, there would be another public hearing related to a site development plan.
Well, it's not a public hearing.
Not a public hearing. I'm sorry.
But they would have to submit a plan for development. Your point is I think a legitimate one, that the plan you see here, as Mr. Zimmer just said, doesn't bind the applicant. And Mr. Boza was very straightforward about it when he said they haven't determined how they're going to finance it, or even indeed if they can finance it. So you're right, there's a possibility this could end up being an R4 property. When I told you that you could have roughly 3 times 6, it probably wouldn't end up being that many, but under the terms of their proffers, you could conceivably have a multifamily dwelling on that property.
You know, so I just go back to what I say, and I really would ask each of you all to really think about that. You know, I don't know how many of you all are native to this area. I can tell you that we have really deep roots here. You know, the property that we're talking about is property that was in my grandmother's family, and that's how it has been passed down in our family. Just imagine that every day you wake up, another piece of your property is gone. Another piece of your property where you played as a child is gone, and now it's a Domino's. You know, now it's a car wash. You know, now it's a CVS. You know, and so is there progress, and is that something that is planned for? So planning commission for is for absolutely, but it's planned for in a very thoughtful manner. And there's zones for it, and I think it's just wrong that zone keeps being in certain areas, in certain neighborhoods, and we keep losing. We've got two houses that are right there at it. You know, one was my great uncle's home that his daughter just finished putting siding on, and so these are people who take pride in their homes. You know, my sister Gwen lives in the house directly beside, and as a matter of fact, my cousin June Elwood, the part of that you all bought is a right of way that he has from my mom's property, which wraps around my sister Gwen's, which goes right up through her, beside her property. You know, so I just asked you all to really think about this. You know, would you like to wake up tomorrow and have a parking lot, or much worse, honestly, 18 strangers living beside you?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to come forward at this time?
I'd just like to say something.
You'd have to come up there.
She had Aubrey's her foot this morning. So
okay.
Yes.
State your name and your address, please.
My name is Gwen Townsend, and I live at 959 South Boston Road. And my concern is a lot of times, and I came to the meeting when they were putting in the dominoes and all that strip over there, because my cousin, Junior Martin, had owned that property originally. Well, actually, his mother. But, and when we got to the meeting, they went on and telling us all of this that they were doing. And I made the statement, so this is a done deal already, and we're just here for the formality of it all. And one of the members on the board said, yes, ma'am, without thought, because he got the worst looks in the world. So that put that in me that a lot of this is already planned anyhow. All of this is just a formality because it's going to be done regardless of the fact that Deidre's here, I'm here, we've spoken. And I'm living right there. In the summertime, I hear those people over there, that darn car wash. You can't hardly hear it. I'm in the house with my doors and windows closed, so they never open my windows up. And you can hear them blasting that music over there. You can hear that car wash halfway up 600. And all the guys that leave that car wash over there, you think they are in the Indy 500 when they zoom past my house. And when you've lived in the county, and I'm sure that at least three-fourths of you here live in the county somewhere, that you don't have all of that. And when they zoom past my house, sometimes I have to back up and just sit there and wait for the next retard to come down the roadway instead of running into me trying to get out of there when I've gotten almost down to my mother's house because he's driving too fast. And it's just so much to be thought about before we put this zoning thing in, because and it's not only just me, it's the people on the other side of the road too. They just feel like, you know, all of a sudden you got these pieces of property and you just pack and pack and pack and pack and pack until you feel like you're a clustered Northern Virginia area, or down there near that place in Richmond, Short Pond. You walk out your door and you walk into somebody else's door. You walk out your door and you fall over into somebody else's business. And you know, I'm not, what the fire department does, hopefully they get what they need, because I'm all about that. But all of these people packed into that area up there, and they just do what they want to do.
It needs to be more thoughtful.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I understand some of the comments you made, because a lot of this land in that same area, I used to do my hunting. Where the dollar store is was my family's land. So I know all about this land through here. So, but we also, the fire department has purchased this property with the explicit purpose of adding extra parking. I was down there last night, and the parking was horrible at the firehouse and the rescue squad area. So that's their main purpose, is to be able to add extra parking.
Now, I don't have any problem with that.
But the problem, I think, goes back to the zoning that gets attached to it, and not knowing whether the funding will
because
happen.
Because it is, that's why it's done R4, because it's for civic uses. Right. Thank y'all very much. Do we, this time, the Planning Commission will have more discussion about this?
In A1, can you have civic uses in A1? That would cover this as well. Fred, do you?
Yes, you can.
Okay. So whether this is rezoned R4 or not, it can the fire department can still do what
they
want to do.
They can still have some development related to civic uses.
The main thing that I think, and I don't know whether this problem, I haven't thought about it, but thing I'd be concerned about is making sure that the accessory uses can follow along, because the Supreme Court has said that if you have two parcels, you know, like these two, if the one at the top of the page is R4 and the one at the bottom of the page is A1, then you can't have an accessory use on one that's accessory to something that's not permitted in the other. So under that case, for example, let's say the lower one remained A1, and let's say you set up a farm on it, and chickens, for example, and you raise chickens on the A1 part, according to the Supreme Court, you couldn't take the chickens across the road in the R4 because raising chickens is not permitted in R4. Now, I'm making that up, and that didn't have any bearing, that particular use didn't have any bearing on this case, but I don't know whether the applicant has thought about that. Clearly, it's not just parking, because it does, you can see the new building there goes over the property line.
Get up for a
minute. Ask the chairman.
Chairman Maggie.
Yes.
If this is going to be added, this is R4, this is A1, are they allowed to do that?
If the zoning remained A1, would they be allowed to move that line?
Will this building have an R4 and
no.
A1?
They would not.
It wouldn't, you would, what I would you have a setback. Well.
Right.
Okay.
Now, you could join the two lots and have
building?
Two.
No. Okay, not
realize this is the existing building right here.
But they could join the two lots and have different zoning?
You could
still
do that.
Do that?
Yeah.
Okay, so you could do that.
You could do that, okay.
But the problem with that is then you'd have to make sure everything was permitted on in both zones.
Oh, right. That has to be clarified.
And is it?
Right,
it's a civic use, so I would assume that it is.
The civic uses are permitted in the agricultural district as well.
Yeah, so
you built the
yeah.
second building straddled with the two different zones.
If it's two parcels, it would have to meet the setback requirements, regardless of each parcel.
And
so they would have to drop the lot line.
They would have. Can they do that? But they can't if this is our.
Yes, good.
They
would just have to. The zoning would still apply as a line. The lot line would just be dropped.
It would. It makes it more complicated. Let's put it that way. And whether you could do it, you probably can. Now, one thing would be a concern. I don't know what other kind of uses they're going to make of it. Again, a lot of this is off the top of my head because I haven't thought about these issues. But if, for example, you're going to have a bunkhouse in there, whether the bunkhouse would be permitted in A1 might be as an accessory use. But I think that's, my guess is that's probably why they included the other residential uses in the R4.
Can we ask that question rather than guessing at it, perhaps?
Well, we discussed this at the TR meeting, Barry, you were there.
Yes.
And they did say that they would like, that they need bunkhouses.
Possibility of that.
Have paid people from...
It's not just paid. I mean, right now the rescue squad, they're volunteer, but they do 12-hour shifts. Mm-hmm. So they do sleep in the rescue squad. The fire building does not have those facilities. So the additional building that you see there would include a kitchen, bunk areas, showers, and facilities, so whether they be paid or volunteer, they could stay there a 12-hour shift.
Wouldn't that still be civic, though? wouldn't that still be allowed under A1?
Well, the question is whether that's an accessory use. It might be an accessory use. Mr. Chairman, you can see there are a lot of things that we haven't discussed because I didn't know they were going to come up. One thing that occurs to me is that if you have a civic use and it's a rescue squad, for example, you're going to have things other than, you know, parking the ambulance there. You're going to have storage for materials and equipment and facilities for dressing and sleeping and eating and all that kind of thing. Is that really a dwelling unit, or is it some kind of, it's really more like a, it's more like a transient housing? Because
that was a question I asked at the right. TRC meeting about the why fact of reason of being R4 was the fact that there was going to be possibility of the fact of people staying there and residential type stuff.
Well, you know, it's not unusual to have an accessory kind of dwelling for things like you might have an on-site security officer, you know, that lives there, a resident manager, if you will. That's the same kind of thing that's going on here, because the primary activity is the headquarters of the emergency service. So you have the ambulances and storage and all that kind of stuff. But you also got to have a place for the crew to be ready. The crew doesn't live there, but they would stay, spend the night, things like that. That impresses me more like a transient housing. So it may be that they don't need that R4. I'm a little hesitant to say that categorically, because that Supreme Court case that I just told you about was my case and I lost. So these, a lot of these things came up, and you need to think them through very maturely. I thought I had thought that one through maturely. The Supreme Court didn't think so. I think you should, the long and short of it is that I think the lady has raised a legitimate issue that, for whatever reason, if you zone this R4 subject to these proffers, then it can be used for any other use other than the ones that are proffered out. And the picture you see here is a plan, and I'm sure it's a good faith plan, but Mr. Boza has told you it may not happen. Or sometime in the future it might happen, and they might move and go somewhere else and they have to dispose of the property or whatever it might be. So you are zoning this R4, and it could be used for these other uses. So I'm not telling you that's necessarily a bad idea, because this is a, you know, this is, times have changed since these ladies' families moved there. They're, you know, the commercial uses and the higher density residential uses and things. I can remember when none of those uses was there. And they've changed.
This is in a growth area, isn't it, Steve?
Yes.
Yeah, it is in a growth area, so a certain degree of change is going to be to be expected. Now, whether you want to encourage that in this case, that's up to you. But to say that this property should never be used for anything other than what it's been used for historically is not what the comprehensive plan says. So that is a legitimate exercise of legislative discretion to you and the board. But that's a little different issue than the issue of whether they could do it with A1 and R4.
Okay,
if you're concerned about it, you may want to let what the staff think about it and let you think about it.
Can we, if we decide to do this, can we defer this to further study whether the things could be still done in the A1?
Yes.
Also, I think the question is it necessary to have the multifamily dwelling for the firemen or the rescue squad to sleep there? I don't think so, but I think that we need to look into that.
That's what I was saying. My immediate reaction is this is not a multifamily dwelling.
No.
It's more like transient housing, but it's really accessory to the primary use.
I wouldn't even call it transient housing.
No, it isn't transient housing, but it's
accessory use.
It's more like transient housing than it is an apartment building. But it's really, as you say, Ms. Ziegler, it's really accessory to the fire station and the rescue squad.
As if you worked in a hospital and, you know, like my daughter Ariane, she's a midwife. She has to stay there all night because a baby might be born. That doesn't mean she's living there or transient. It's part of her job, and I think it's
well. The obvious thing is, I'm confident that the rescue squad and/or the fire department are going to have storage of lots of different
sure.
things.
Yeah.
They're probably going to have tires and motor oil and stuff like that. That's perfectly legitimate thing. It's an accessory to the emergency services use. This kind of housing impresses me as legitimately accessory to it too.
Yeah.
Where that comes down, it probably means that the multifamily is not what they need. It's more than they need. So it probably doesn't make any difference. To tell you the truth, I'm more concerned about the dissimilar zoning and whether how the accessory uses match up.
Yeah, I understand.
Any other members of the Planning Commission have any comments to make? Any further discussion? We've got several choices there. What we can do is we can make a motion to accept, we can make a motion to decline, or we can make a motion to defer. So do we have a motion from the floor?
Would you want to allow the applicant to address some of these concerns that have been brought up before we go to a motion, or that's just a thought? I don't know if they want to even. We brought up some options. Some options have been brought up that they could, if they chose to, consider. And I don't know if they want to address us, but I leave that to you, Mr. Chairman.
If the applicant would like to address some of these concerns, I know legally they can't add any proffers at this time because they have to be submitted.
Well, they can. They can add proffers. My concern is that regardless of what they would say, I, for one, don't feel comfortable giving you definitive recommendations on this right now.
Okay.
Because these are issues that I think I certainly hadn't thought about. My guess is that the staff hadn't thought about it either.
The applicant, feel free to address any of the concerns we may have. We have some. As you can see, we have some concerns about which way this should be.
Sure. And my name is Justin Champ. I'm the engineer for the project. There's lots of things going on with this, obviously, but I think there's the one thing I start with, and this is a growth area. So when the folks at Fire Rescue bought the property, that was part of the analysis that we expect perhaps smaller setbacks and a different expectation of development on this parcel. And happens to be right next door to them. They happen to be zoned R4. And as I've seen lots of cases, Mr. Payne has probably seen a lot more than I have, but of split zoning that creates all the terrible complexities that we would not want to put on our client. This is not something we would recommend to anybody to do. Because the ordinances allowed uses can change over time in different zones. And then what do you do if that happens? So we wouldn't want that at all. The other issue is this very, very significant setbacks in the A1 zone. That even if not applied between the zoning lines. So for example, I tend to think that there would be a setback if you had a A1 here and a R4 here, there may be setbacks from the zoning line, just the property line. That's a whole different can of worms. But the setback to the building, we've looked at the setbacks here, I don't think we can build this addition like we need to with the A1 zoning. So that's just not an option from a zoning standpoint. Now as far as the uses, there's no intention here of being developers. This is the fire and rescue. And you've seen they desperately need more parking and they need more room, more building. So that's what this plot's for. I think the worry we have about excluding multifamily is because Mr. Payne said it's sort of close. What if, for example, there was a need for a detached structure for people to stay in? Overnight or short, maybe it's not part of the building. Is that still an accessory user? Other circumstances like that may arise. that the, I think it would benefit the department to have that flexibility or to not have to worry about it coming into question later. So that's where we stand on these. And I say I go back to the point that was made about it being a growth area. Yes, things change, and that's to the better of some and the detriment of others, and I don't know what can be done about that in the course of life, but these are one of these areas that the county designated for growth, and it's sort of it's changed over time to that, and we're trying to fit into that area where people are going to be with our operation. We just really need some flexibility and some, I think, some continuity in zoning to be confident that we're not going to have trouble down the road that we want to do. So I think that's a nutshell on our side. If there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
I'd like to make a motion that we defer this until the staff have a chance to review all the options and so forth.
I have a motion from Mr. Johnson to defer this until a later date, until the staff and county attorney can further study it and make recommendations.
Mr. Chairman, I was just talking to Mr. Stewart. I'm confident we can have these issues resolved by your next meeting if you want to just defer to the next meeting.
Would that be your motion, you defer it to the next meeting, to let county staff and the county attorney determine recommendations about which way?
For further clarity, you would like me to, as zoning administrator, apply A1, theoretically what A1 would do with this proposal, how it would apply to their project?
My sense is what we need to do is set up some hypothetical scenarios where, and I'm sure Mr. Shimp could be helpful with this, where what I'll call the upper parcel is R4, the lower parcel is A1. What impact does that have on the proposed development?
And there was another potential solution talked about, potentially proffering out other uses.
Or just other
proffers. Other proffers, then you should analyze that, certainly.
And that might be another
potential solution that would address the concerns of these ladies.
Hey, can I ask a real quick question too? Because the parcel in front that you see right there, that actually is a residential parcel. My cousin Bryson Gill live on it, and I see the line goes through there. So would you be changing us? Would you all be changing? You're not suggesting changing zoning with that, right? You're just
the line doesn't go through there.
No, what I'm saying is that you're changing the zoning of the parcel that runs through, because that parcel runs directly behind her.
I think that line's run that wrong. I don't know why that.
Do you see what I'm saying? That,
yeah,
yeah,
I see.
Okay.
It's not doing it up on the front. It's only doing it. I think that's a part of some of the topography, actually.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And there are actually two residential areas,
right. My mom also gifted a parcel to my aunt, who's now deceased as well, right behind that one. Yeah.
Okay, we have a motion to defer until the next meeting to study concerns with this piece of property by Mr. Johnson. Do I have a second? Okay, have a motion by Mr. Johnson, a second by Mrs. Eager. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 4-0. It is deferred to the March meeting. Thank you.
Thank you all so much. I'll be good. Be safe out there. It hadn't started yet, but it feels like it's going to.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is ZMP 1501 Memory Lane Property LLC.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, this is our next zoning application request from I-1 and I-2 to all I-2 zoning. ZMP 1501, and it's a request to rezone 6.746 acres of tax map 4, section A. Parcel 97A from I-1 and I-2 to all I-2, and
industrial general. It's located within the Zion Crossroads Community Planning Area. And the applicant stated that if they rezone this parcel, it would increase potential industrial uses. Also consideration with the adjacent sewage treatment plant effluents located at the Women's Correctional Facility next door, just to the east. There was a rezoning of the property back in 07, and staff reviewed that file and saw the delineation of the breakdown. Part of it was zoned I-1, part of it was zoned I-2, but there has been some ambiguity about the location of the zoning lines, and part of the applicant's motivation here is to remove that ambiguity and just go ahead and rezone the entire parcel. This is a zoning map. You can see this is the subject parcel here, adjacent to the Women's Correctional Facility, and this is the Diller property here. Aerial photograph. This is the applicant's sketch plan. This is triangular shaped parcel here. A few photographs. This is looking out. There's not a lot to see. It all looks white because of the snow and the ice, but did the best we could with it. You just kind of see the rooftops of the Women's Correctional Facility here looking east, and southern parcel just to the west. This is the front of Mr. Dillard's building there. Wanted to capture the public notice sign. We did receive a phone call from a Mrs. Pendleton, and I believe she lives on Memory Lane, and she was curious about the nature of the application. We explained to her the request, and she appeared to be satisfied with our explanation of the nature of the application. Again, this is a request to rezone 6.746 acres. Tax map 4A97A is in the Zion Crossroads planning area. If approved, the site development plan would be required to submit to planning officer for review and approval. The comp plan considers this area that is conducive to further developments due to its proximity to location, major transportation networks such as 1564 and 250. It's an area that should be zoned for industrial and or commercial uses given its location and proximity to major corridors. In conclusion, the request does appear to meet the intent of the comprehensive plan, and that this area is the county's primary regional development area and is targeted as a regional employment center. Primarily mixed use, mixed income development that will help generate, develop the infrastructure needed for such development as well as diversifying the county's tax base. The commission should consider how this request does or does not align with those goals and objectives of the comprehensive plan. And suggested motion is here before the commission, and the applicant is here for this also.
Does anybody have any questions? Would the applicant like to speak at this time?
No, I can answer any questions, but I think Chuckwell covered everything pretty thoroughly. I can talk. Well, actually. Oh, yeah, Justin Champion. Just so you all are aware, we're talking to the woman's prison about using some of their effluent and sewer system for industrial type uses, right? And the I-2 zone allows more process kind of manufacturing, and that's why the request is here. This happens to be the part of the parcel that is sort of downstream, if you will, of the sewer plant. So it's a good opportunity to bring some uses that might be to use that, or even Mr. Dillard himself, he can use the water for putting on construction sites in the summertime, dust down, things like that. So it's an opportunity to reuse water, hopefully. We spoke to the prison representatives this week. They're excited about the prospect, so we can't guarantee it's going to happen, but we need this sort of zoning to open up the avenues for us. That's why we're doing this.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question?
Yes.
Did I understand then what you're talking about is using effluent from the women's prison sewer plant?
Correct.
Okay, you're not putting effluent into it
Oh, no.
You're using the process.
We're using their water to take for reuse applications.
Right, okay.
Seems like it also cleans up a problem that I guess the county at some point is partially responsible for. We have two different zoning types and we don't know where they are. So this would help with that potential problem.
It's an odd-shaped piece of property also.
Could staff make one and notify the commission of one thing? It's in the staff report. I just want to say it here. Is that it would expand the options of use on the property. Heavy manufacturing would still require a special use permit. I just wanted to throw that out there. It was in the report.
Thank you.
There is some. The reason I asked the question I did was that flying off into areas of which I'm not competent, but I am informed that using this kind of sewer plant effluent could actually raise the capacity of the plant. So that might actually be beneficial
to the county.
To the county, yes.
Because it would not count against their discharge. Because you're using it in a process.
That's right. And the county does have a contract with the DOC for the water and sewer.
Does time for planning commission have discussion time? Does anyone want to make any comments? Or
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I think you should note there's no public present.
Yes. Normally we have a public comment second. We open up the public hearing at this time and no public present this time. We will dispense with that and go to Planning Commission discussion.
Well, I think this fits with the comprehensive plan. It's attractive to the county to hopefully get some more business in that area. And I think that it's a good thing. Probably we should do this.
Any other comments or discussion? If not, do I have a motion?
I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of the attached ordinance for CMP 1501, the request to amend the Fluvanna County zoning map with respect to approximately 6.746 acres of tax map 4, section A, parcel 97A, to resume the same from I-1 Industrial Limited to I-2 Industrial General and I-2 Industrial General.
Second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Eager, a second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 4-0. It is approved. Thank you.
See you all next time, I guess.
Yeah.
I think the next item on the agenda is a discussion of changes to the county zoning ordinance regarding.
We actually have old business, Mr.
Okay.
Conference plan update, Mr. Lindsay.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have anything new to report. There have been no developments since we spoke at the work session. It is a good opportunity if you all have any questions or comments since last time that you'd like us to address on the comprehensive plan updates.
And you're still working to get the from emergency services?
That was going to be my question. Do they want to be part of this?
I think
we'll just do it on our own.
I think they were supposed to give me some comments in the last week, but I think the weather has played a bit into finishing them up. And we hope to have them by next week. And as soon as we get them, we'll forward them to you, but we're putting some pressure on to get those comments.
Could you possibly talk to Mr. Nichols and see if he can?
Yes. We're seeing what we can do to get.
And I had talked to Mr. Stewart earlier today, and the Board of Supervisors do not want us to be in a hurry of getting this to them at this time because of the amount of the things that they're working on with the budget and tax rate and things of that nature and so forth. So we are going to have some time and so forth like that, and time to we can go back after we get this final section wrapped up, and we can try to review the sections and see if we see anything that we need to change. Now Mr. Shemp has left, but he has offered to come to our next meeting, and when we have our next regular meeting, because I think we're possibly not going to have a work session in March, talk about the PUD ordinance and the way it's written in the comments that and I don't know, well, we could put that on the agenda and get comments about that.
As Mr. Bibb said, our next the board supervisors will be meeting in this room on March 11th, and that leaves a small staff conference room. So Mr. Bibb and I discussed just, since we have a lighter agenda next month, is putting that business on the Planning Commission regular meeting.
We don't have this meeting for next, if we were to have a planning work session.
Right, we wouldn't have this, and we don't have that little.
But our next meeting will be still be in this room, because they'll still be having a budget work session scheduled this time next month.
I don't think they'll fit down that if the public comes.
Because we're basically have decided not to have a work session for March. Okay.
Is it appropriate to give them an update on the stormwater or the flood ordinance, where we're at with that?
I'd be interested in seeing where you think we're standing.
Well, Mr. Payne and his assistant have really definitely have jumped in and sort of helped, because DCR was
she knows how to do these things.
Absolutely. DCR was, you know, not being but so forthcoming with what they still wished to be changed, and also the numbering.
We utilize their model ordinance, but they have problems with
their
model ordinance.
Their own model ordinance.
The problem with it is we developed an ordinance based on our existing floodplain provisions and try to incorporate their model ordinance provisions into it. In some cases, they're kind of hard to dovetail into each other. DCR, I think it's fair to say they haven't been very helpful. The email I saw from the guy said something like, there's a lot of problems with this and we certainly can't recommend approval. And that was about what they said.
Who are you working with?
Nabil at DCR.
Okay.
Well, I think they're going to see a significantly different product when Christina gets done with it.
Actually, Mr. Payne, Christina got it back to me, and we discussed it and sent her version, her updated and fixed version, along to Nabil at her suggestion, and we're waiting comments on that.
Yeah, I think they're going to see it. I think it's going to be rather different. The problem, one of the things that frankly I find very annoying, is they were commenting on things like the numbering in our ordinance, and
section A.
Yeah, and some of the section numbers were wrong. I mean, they were, you know, they would go from A, B, C, D, you know, that may have making that up, but
Virginia
that kind
Tech,
of thing.
Virginia Tech alphabet.
But that kind of stuff is almost totally irrelevant, because that's just textual editing.
Right.
I think what we really like to see out of them is substance. I'm hoping that Christina has pretty much done both. So my guess is that we're going to see more. They're going to be happier with her, with what she's produced, but we don't. As Jay says, we haven't heard back from him, so we can't say that it's true.
So that was all about that.
There aren't any dramatic changes in this. This is Uncle Sam sticking his finger in the pie and messing around. Whether there's anything positive coming out of it, I'm not qualified to say.
Okay. Is there any other old business that we need to discuss? Okay. If not, we'll go on to new business and a discussion of changes to the county's zoning ordinance regarding agribusiness and related issues.
I've already seen Mr. Payne start putting his pen to the document, so I think he's probably got
Mr. Bibb,
a couple
this
comments.
Is, we've been asked to look at aligning our ordinances with better with state code and potentially looking at encouraging agribusiness. When I was at Dinwiddie County, we substantially developed an agribusiness agritourism ordinance about 4 years ago. And as a starting point for discussion, we just took some of those elements from that ordinance, and Mr. Lindsay applied them to how our ordinance is now. And as a starting point of discussion with the commission and Mr. Payne to see which direction, if any, we wanted to head.
And you incorporated all the new regulations that the state had just come up with.
Maybe.
That's our hope.
Maybe. That's why.
We'll tell you after Saturday.
Because
there's at least one that's pending in the General Assembly. I think it's still, I don't know what's become of the bill, but I know there was a bill introduced that was significant.
This isn't necessarily what we're proposing. This is more of a starting point for discussion to see which direction we want to go. I'll turn to let Mr. Lindsay talk about it.
Thanks. I was going to start just so that we're all on the same page with what some of these state new state provisions are. In part, it says no locality shall regulate the carrying out of any of the following activities at an agricultural operation as defined in 32300, which I thought I had here in one of these documents. But unless there's a substantial impact on the health, safety, or general welfare of the public. So, you know, there's still oversight of some sort. It's just significantly relaxed. And then the following activities are agritourism, which I'll define in a second. I do have that in front of me. The sale of agricultural or silvicultural products, or the sale of agricultural-related or silvicultural-related items incidental to the agricultural operation. The preparation, processing, or sale of food products in compliance with another portion of the code. Other activities or events that are usual and customary at Virginia agricultural operations. Any local restriction placed on an activity listed in this subsection shall be reasonable and take into account the economic impact of the restriction on the agricultural operation and the agricultural nature of the activity. No locality shall require a special exception, administrative permit not required by state law, or special use permit for any activity listed in subsection A, which is the part we just went over, on property that is zoned as an agricultural district or classification, unless there is, again, substantial impact on health, safety, or general welfare of the public. Except regarding the sound generated by outdoor amplified music. No local ordinance regulating the sound generated by any activity listed in subsection A shall be more restrictive than the general noise ordinance of the locality. In permitting outdoor amplified music at an agricultural operation, the locality shall consider the effect on adjoining property owners and nearby residents. So again, that does provide a little bit of oversight.
Is that just a question, maybe not imply at all? I've noticed that that thing that they've been having up in Nelson County for several years have been running into problems with ABC and so forth like that. Is that something that could be done under this?
I kind of doubt it. I mean,
I was looking at it.
I really don't know enough about that to say, but I think that's not really agriculture, is it?
It's not agriculture. It's a music festival.
It's a music festival.
Yeah, but I noticed where we had the thing that said amusements, public cultural services, and so forth like that.
Well, I can see where you'd have this come up. One instance where I've actually seen this applied, I believe it was in Albemarle County, it wasn't in Flavanna, was a place where the landowner raised and trained horses for showing. And one of the things that she did in connection with training the horses was to use amplified music. Because because when you had a horse show, I don't know anything about horse shows, but what I understand from her was that the music was actually used in the horse show, and the neighbors objected to the amplified music. The problem is that it's essential to that particular use. That's, I think, what they're getting at here.
Well, see, one of the reasons I asked that, because one of the highlighted things here said outdoor gatherings operated in conjunction with agricultural enterprises and not occurring more than twice in one calendar year. So I was just, that was just
I
a question.
I think something like Lockett would go under the special use permit, which says outdoor gatherings not operated in conjunction.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think if you had the Mrs. Eager will, I guarantee you will know, be able to tell you all about this, but a maple sugar festival, for example.
It's hard to do in Flavanna County, but.
But not on her property in Highland County. It's
Highland, absolutely.
Okay.
Or something like that. If you had, or the one of the things that I'm familiar with personally is the sheepdog trials in Orange.
Yeah.
They do that, I think, once a year. And that's, of course, agriculturally related.
Also, Mr. Bibb, the presence of the outdoor amplified music, we would, as a county, have an ability to regulate it based on that. If they were all there with acoustic instruments, I don't know if we'd have the same ability, but they wouldn't be the same nuisance either. So.
Right, exactly. I just was...
Sure.
Just
but regardless, it's still subject to the general noise ordinance.
Yes, nothing
except
can be more restrictive
right.
than...
So
yes, that's correct.
All this is still subject to the general noise ordinance.
And then there's one more state definition I want to get through, which is agritourism activity. And that means any activity carried out on a farm or ranch that allows members of the general public for recreational, entertainment, or educational purposes to view or enjoy rural activities, including farming, wineries, ranching, historical, cultural, harvest-your-own activities, or natural activities and attractions. An activity is an agritourism activity, whether or not the participant paid to participate in the activity. So it doesn't matter if you're charging admission or not, it would still be considered one. And I apologize for only having two copies of these, but I have them if anybody wants to look through any of those definitions or terms. So then that gets us over here to the licensed farm wineries and regulation of certain activities. This is still state code. In order to preserve the economic vitality of the Virginia wine industry, while maintaining appropriate land use to authority to protect the health, safety, and welfare of citizens, and to permit the reasonable expectation of uses in specific zoning categories. That's the purpose of the new local regulation, of the new ordinance about licensed farm wineries. Local restriction upon such activities and events of farm wineries licensed in accordance with Title 4.1 to market and sell their products shall be reasonable and shall take into account the economic impact of the farm winery of such restriction, the agricultural nature of such activities and events, and whether such activities and events are usual and customary for farm wineries throughout the Commonwealth. Usual and customary activities and events at farm wineries shall be permitted without local regulation unless there is a substantial impact on health, safety, and welfare. No local ordinance regulating noise other than outdoor amplified music arising from activities and events at farm wineries shall be more restrictive than in the general noise ordinance. So again, it's partway towards leave them alone, and so the ordinances that we're working on are largely related, or are in that spirit, I guess I would say. In addition to the Dinwiddie ordinance that Jason mentioned, there are a few definitions that we borrowed from Albemarle, and those are those new ones that I sent to you. In that most recent email. So that would be farm winery event, farm brewery event, and farm brewery, and licensed brewery, or limited brewery. And so that's all the background I have. Do you all have any questions at this point on the ordinance?
This may not apply to this at all, but in agricultural areas like that, and maybe where they may have a vineyard or something like that. Do we have anything to do with them putting in entrances or new roads into property off of a county road?
Well, VDOT certainly does, and it would depend on what they're doing. If they're putting in an entrance just putting in to get your machinery in the field, we would have very limited say on that. I don't think there's anything in these statutes that says we don't have the authority to impose require review of a site plan.
And VDOT has pretty significant regulations.
There's no question
for
about
temporary
VDOT.
Those temporary roads, because they do it for loggers all the time. So
well,
somebody's
I'm thinking more in terms of a more permanent usage that's not purely agricultural. So, for example, you have a place that has a meeting facility where you have wedding receptions and things like that. That's going to generate a lot of traffic, and that's the kind of thing where I don't see why we wouldn't have the authority to review a site plan. Now, we wouldn't have the authority to require a special use permit.
Actually, the main reason I'm asking is I see something happening, and I didn't know whether I should mention it to the planning department or not.
Mr. Payne, correct me if I'm wrong, but everything that we added in here is related to the uses in the A1, and all of the normal provisions of A1 are still there, so your setbacks and
right
regular. Okay, so anything that we already could regulate about the site would still be regulatable, if that's a word, about the site.
We're still able to regulate.
Regulable.
Regulable. Very good.
Thank you.
Zinger is a highly literate woman.
Jay, so everything in green is new.
Great. Everything in green is new, and then I'm not sure if you have it or not, but the electric blue type one, and it should only be in definitions towards the front, would be those newest definitions. Again, that's just
okay,
farm winery event. Oh, it's the older one. The only new definitions, only things that would be different from what you have are farm brewery event, and farm winery event. And just those definitions. And, yeah.
Okay. Reading back here. It talks about, and this is all new too, everything in green.
Everything in green is stuff that's been added as part of,
okay,
of this.
Because it talks about how many animals you can have.
Correct.
And I'm assuming that they're talking about where you have animals congregate, like a feedlot or a milking barn, not that you limit the farmer to having less than 300, a herd of less than 300.
Which one specifically are you looking at? So I can make sure.
In our actual package, it's on the computer, it's page 87, where it talks about the 1,000 cumulative and then the 300.
87? Thank
you. So that's in the definitions, is that?
Well, it has to do with requirements of section 22-267 and so forth like that. Let's see if I can find the rest of it.
The definition of that.
Because it says the Commonwealth of Virginia or any department or division thereof to be an intensive facility operation subject to the requirements of section 22-267 of this article. In no case shall a facility as defined herein exceed a cumulative total of 1,000 units. Then in the next section it talks about the 300.
It's 22-4-11-1.
And that's talk about an intensive poultry.
I can understand if you're talking about intensive where you have a feedlot, but I don't understand if I have, you know, I had 175 head on my farm and they were walking around, and had I not sold them, I would have probably today, I'd sold them a year and a half ago, I'd have more than 300.
Sure.
So, and what you do as a farmer when you
22-4-11-1-1
use a chain harrow,
mm-hmm,
and you know, knock up the manure pile so that it's distributed in the land, and then it rains, it goes into the land. So that's why I'm assuming that, you know, you're not saying that a farmer can't have a cow-calf unit of 300. But, you know, I need a definition to
sure
know what it really means.
Because
it's talking about nutrient treatment, which, I mean, if you have a lot of animals together,
right,
yes, you have to have basins to catch the
Well, are you talking about the intensive facility or the regular livestock dairy or poultry facility? Because basically there one definition, the intensive one has at least 300 animal units present.
Right.
And then in a regular one, you would have
at least 150
animal units. So I didn't see the maximum that you were mentioning. Or is that, I guess that's the maximum of 1,000 animal units.
And that's something to do with the Commonwealth of Virginia regulations?
Yes, sir. That's language that was worked.
Because that's their 22-267 ordinance. They
the Department of Agriculture, how they define
that's what
things.
I thought. That's the way I was reading it. That's what I...
I mean, there are, on the following pages, there are minimum lot sizes based on the number of animal units. So, for example, a poultry facility with at least 150 animal units would need to be on 10 acres. Mm-hmm. Is that... I'm a city boy, so I'm not sure I understand all of the farming aspect of the question.
Okay, it says under here, with a livestock dairy and poultry facility, any livestock goes on... including but not limited to feed storage, bins, litter storage sites, incinerators, manure storage sites, which at any one time has at least 150 animal units, and which is occupied or has been occupied for the last 12 months.
But if I'm reading this correctly, this is directly from the Commonwealth of Virginia.
So was I out of compliance when I had 175 units on my...
This says at least.
At least 150. So
okay.
So you exceeded the minimum, but there was no maximum that you'd
be. So I could go up to 1,000.
Yeah.
And then later on it says you have to have a site plan that shows where your facility is, and you know, in a normal farm, you don't have to have a barn to bring everybody in. They just sort of hang out in the woods. So why would it bring you a picture of my field and say the cows are going to hang out here?
Right.
Anyway, I'm
where's the site plan requirement? That you're
certified plats, development plans,
22.4.11.5.
And then also I have a question about setbacks. You know, you have to have 1,000 feet from somewhere, and you can't have more than, you have to have a mile between one farm and another farm with, that doesn't make sense.
Regarding we should probably start with the site plan, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it is saying that they want filed with the zoning administrator a development plan which indicates the number, size, and location of livestock, dairy, or poultry facilities planned for the subject parcel. When such development plan has been filed with and approved by the zoning administrator and during the period in which it remains in effect, the planned facilities shall be obtained to meet setbacks only from those dwellings and uses existing at the time the development plan is approved. Yeah, Jason.
Is it saying,
I think this language came from what they've done in some counties like Dinwiddie, where you have the intensive chicken poultry facilities, and you don't want too many poultry facilities within close proximity.
Is this saying under 150 just comes under local ordinance, and over 150 comes under the Commonwealth? Because of reading that, at least 150.
Under 150, it wouldn't be regulated. It's considered intensive above
300
threshold. Yeah,
depending on different definitions. That's when it becomes intensive.
Because I kept reading that thing about the Commonwealth or any other agency.
Your typical farmer isn't going to come anywhere close to these thresholds. It's more, again, the reason for the regulation in Dinwiddie was to keep the poultry farms from being too close together and sneaking up neighborhoods, basically.
Mr. Pinn, do you have any comment on that one?
Well, one of the problems I have with it, and I have to admit that I've only glanced at this, I haven't read it in great detail, but one of the concerns I have is when you talk about the number of animals, I think you have to define that as mature animals. Because if you had hog, for example, she could have one litter, and you go from having a boar, a sow, now you got 15 pigs, so you got 17 hogs. You know, it's less of a problem with a cow, but hogs, chickens, you know, you have, how many chickens can you produce in a season?
Animal units is based on weight, right, Jim?
Oh, I thought that was just the number of animals.
That's based on weight.
I can produce a lot myself in my little hoop house, so you can make a lot of chickens.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm thinking. I'm concerned. Where we dealt with this before was dogs, where you have have a breeding kennel, and you've got three bitches, and each one has a litter of 10.
But I think that's
all of a sudden you got 33 dogs.
Yeah.
But I think that's just covered in it saying existing livestock, dairy, or poultry facilities permitted a one-time expansion to amount not to exceed 150 animal units above the facility's present number of animals.
Well, that's not a one-time expansion, because, you know, let's assume you had 50 sows. You're going to breed them every year.
Right.
And if you had 50 sows and each one had 10 pigs, which is not unusual, you could have 500 animals. Now, you're not going to have them for very long.
Right.
But you're going to have them.
And, you know, maybe I probably need to reread this again, because my feeling is that when I was reading is this Virginia really want? Are you trying to say we want agribusiness, but we want it to be like wineries, and you know, we don't really want farming, real traditional farming? And if that's the case, you know, I don't agree with it.
Sure.
I've been a farmer for a long time, and I can't believe that Virginia wouldn't encourage.
Where also is this 22-26, section 22-67 of
this
article?
I think that's an
article.
I don't think that's applicable to this ordinance. I think that's from an ordinance section you copied and pasted.
Yeah, that is that in the newest one with the?
That's in the definitions.
The
so
one
the
you
high,
gave
the
us
the green
tonight.
Highlighted one.
Okay, I believe that should be 22-33 for Fluvianas. I meant to change that.
But that's mentioned.
3-3, yeah.
3-3. And then there was a lot of setbacks. Did anybody?
Yes. And so that the setbacks that she's referring to, that's 22-4-11-3.
Yeah.
From existing dwellings owned by the facility operator or immediate family member of the operator, 300 feet. That's from the
this is for the intensive facilities of how many animal units?
At least 150. So not
the
intensive.
Which is 1,000 pounds of live weight per unit.
I think we need to have Mr. Payne read this and take a look at it and give us some guidance on it myself, because some of it.
Can I get a copy that's not gray?
Absolutely. I'll email it to you this evening. It's green when it's emailed to you. So,
okay.
Because I'm confused about some of this, about the Commonwealth of Virginia and its agencies and so forth, too. So
part of the problem is, and I don't mean to be critical to staff, but part of the problem is you don't want to put something like this, you don't want to attach section numbers to it, because some of the section numbers are not where they should be, and it gets confusing to put this in. One of the questions I have is how this dovetails with our existing intensive farming provisions now.
Yeah.
I think you were on the commission when that came up. That never really made a lot of sense to me. When it came in, but it's there. If we're gonna supplant it, or we're gonna supplement it, or however we're gonna do it, we need to do it in an orderly fashion.
Yes, and also, how many? Is there any way of finding out how many farms you have? How many? Are there any feedlots? Are there any poultry houses with 1,000 turkeys or chickens in them?
We talked to John Thompson about bringing him in to a work session in the future.
He wasn't able to make it this week, but he's interested in coming.
Oh, he definitely. John will have a lot to say about that.
Oh, actually, I already have his comments.
We already got
I have his comments and my responses. Which
can you email that?
I can. I was hoping to get Mr. Payne to make sure that I was right about everything I said back before I gave it to all of you.
You're among friends.
Oh, sure.
Okay, we won't hang you on.
The one you gave us tonight, is that different than what's in the package?
That's the one that included John's comments updated.
That's correct. The only things that have changed since, well, the email that you received and this printout should be the same.
Because that's on our computers, that's all highlighted in green.
Correct.
Not gray.
And the only real things that have been added because of John's comments so far was that I added goats next to sheep at his suggestion. That is, yes, in 22491, he basically suggested that it should say goats as well, so I added that. His primary questions, we can go through his questions and see if my answers are reasonable. He mentioned in the definition of agricultural tourism that bed and breakfast and farm stays were not included. They are addressed later. I pointed out that they're addressed separately, and as farm stays are by right in A1, it didn't need any further enabling.
I think you should get John's specific comments on how this relates to our current intensive poultry and livestock facilities.
Okay.
Commission for the next time we get together with this. That way we can have him prepared to answer those, comment on that, and we can have a discussion on that next time.
I know the state tries to keep a count of how many animals we have per county. It's every year I get a huge thing from the Department of Agriculture to fill out for how many animals. And, yeah, so I'm sure that they're somewhere tallying it all up. But.
I guess my chickens are under the radar. Yeah. All 15 of them, man. Yeah. It's messing the count up bad.
I think the goal is to encourage agricultural-related businesses. We don't want to do anything, tamper with anything to discourage it.
Right.
So that's why his comments are going to be very important.
The setbacks here, one of them is interesting. It says existing dwellings not owned by the facility operator or immediate family is 1,000 feet. Well, you know where Tom and Mary live. They enjoy looking at my cows, and that's not 1,000 feet. I'd be lucky if it's 100 from their home to the fence. So, does that really? And what happens if I have my farm and somebody wants to build a house and it's not 1,000 feet?
Well, that's
away?
Taken care of. There is a provision in here for existing uses don't count.
No, existing uses. But suppose, like I sell the pieces, the three lots mm-hmm. over there, they want to build a house. Will it be allowed to build a house if I put cows over there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it doesn't apply to the house, it applies to cows.
Okay, cows so somebody else existing. Can come in knowing that there are cows there and say, I don't mind, I'll put my house here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or I do mind.
And
I'm still going to
put my
house
here.
I'm general counsel of the Rivanna Rifle and Pistol Club. I know all about that phenomenon.
Yeah, I just, as reading it, you can read it as this puts the burden on the person who wants to move in the county as well as puts the burden on the farmer who's got his cows there.
Well, I think from that perspective, these statutes are intended to protect the farmer.
Right.
They're not intended to protect the person who moves in next to the farmer.
Okay, well, sometimes it doesn't read like that to me.
I understand.
So, if the state really wants us, it should be easier to. I think it should be more encouraging than you can't do this, you can't do that. You have to have a site plan. It just sort of reads the other way.
I understand what you're saying, Ms.
Okay.
Here. That's a
good
observation.
The simple.
Yeah, but I guess that's who said put your finger in it, stirs it up. Did you say that in the pie? I think, is that what's happening here?
That's what Uncle Sugar does.
So maybe we should all just look at this again and read it carefully. And
I will get Mr. Thompson to come to either the March meeting or our next available work session.
Because I don't want us to discourage people from farming in Virginia.
Well, I think it ought to be exactly the opposite. I think
exactly.
These statutes are intending to encourage it. One thing that I don't know what happened to this bill, but one bill that came up in the General Assembly was farm distilleries.
Mm-hmm.
and I know that's becoming a topical issue because I think it was last year for the first time Mount Vernon started producing whiskey and was using the original recipes and all this sort of thing. And I think that's becoming more and more fashionable.
Well, driving from here to St. Louis, you get on 64 and you don't get off. And you're going through Kentucky, and almost every exit, there's a distillery for bourbon. It's like, wow.
You know, about a third of those are in dry counties. Kentucky's a weird place. Yeah. Because I lived there in Hardin County, Kentucky for a while, and there's Jim Beam's dry county.
My daddy grew up in Lynchburg.
You can make it, but you can't drink it.
At least you can't talk about drinking.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, one of the things I would caution you to do, though, is ignore the numbering. Don't.
Okay.
Frankly, I think we're not going to have a Section 3 agritourism. I'm not saying we shouldn't have the agritourism, but don't call it Article 3.
Yeah,
but
I think
don't worry about that. Just ignore those things and just use them as
reference
as placeholders.
For us, yeah.
Yeah, for convenience. Don't get it. Don't worry about the forms.
Okay.
Worry about the substance.
I think it's kind of thorough, because I can't find it now, but it even had a definition of what a family was, because it doesn't include cousins and stuff
right.
like that.
Nieces, nephews.
Can't remember what that was, but I saw that somewhere. That was in green, as well as I remember.
I had fond memories of green too. Grandparents lived there.
In school.
I will say, at Dinwiddie County, this was a year and a half long process, and we had committees with farmers and extension people, and business people in the community. So,
any firearms involved?
No, everybody, what started it all was we had a gentleman.
You need to explain it to Mr. Lindsay.
Concealed carry only.
We had a gentleman who wanted to, he came to me one day and he wanted to slaughter his own cattle and sell beef. He wanted to build a building, basically a butcher shop with a refrigerator and sell the beef on site.
Well, he wanted an abattoir, though.
An abattoir, which has to be licensed and inspected.
Yeah, he had to be.
Yeah, not just a butcher shop, but a slaughterhouse.
Mm-hmm. But he decided against that. He was going to take them to a facility in North Carolina,
have them slaughtered
there, then bring back the meat and just sell.
I think how you can do it in Virginia is, and I used to do this with my lambs, you actually sell the live lamb to Mr. Payne. Would you like to buy a lamb? Oh, I'd love to. This is your little lamb. I'll just take it to the slaughterhouse and deliver it to you.
Well, we did some time ago.
You sound like Christine Soule.
you sell the live lamb. You take it over to Stewart's Draft. They slaughter it.
Oh, yeah.
And I deliver it to you.
The slaughtering facility has to be inspected.
We did some
ordinances
about this
sell
about
them
three or four years ago when we did the definitions.
I couldn't sell him.
Slaughterhouse and so forth.
Yeah, slaughterhouses are
and
industrial.
Take him the
that's
meat
true.
And then we did something in agriculture.
Right.
Used to, I can't remember everything that we did.
Custom slaughterhouse, I think is the term you used.
But she's saying, so the meat doesn't have to be inspected, USDA inspected, if you buy the live lamb. And,
right.
And I know when we've, with Chuck Wright, raised cows, taken them, we took them down to Gladys, got them slaughtered. Each piece, in the vacuum sealed piece of meat, this little sticker, a little piece of paper says not for resale.
I tell you where I'm familiar with that is when I kill a deer, I take it to a place in Madison, and they do the same thing. They you know, you bring the deer in, and then you walk out with shrink wrap packages of venison, and they're stamped the same way.
You bring it to my house, I take a third, and I cut it up for you.
That's why I would bring it to your house.
One of our former school board members used to have a butcher shop at his house in Canada.
It's hard work in November, but some of these things are very interesting operations. You talk about them being licensed. There used to be one up at Boswell's Tavern.
I remember that.
And that one is no more because the neighbors got tired of having the health department raided.
on 158 going down to the Outer Banks. There's a winery and a butcher mm-hmm. shop and all combined.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Do we have any other discussion on new business tonight? If not, if there's no objections, we will adjourn.
What's that?
You turned off the recorder?
No.
Well, go ahead. I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
Deidre, don't listen to this part.
You can turn it off.
Don't listen to this part, Deidre.
You made